Wilson, like a cork in the ocean over his head.
Marking contest over the top. Subic, great grab.
Across the ground. Bam! In comes Donny Wurzbach.
Got it out to a kick. Kick smothered. Check. Hunter! Who would have thought the sequel would be just as good as the original?
Kicks inside 50. McGovern! McGovern! What a player!
Sheik needs to be inch perfect. The
The premiers of 1992.
The 1994 premiers.
Premiers. The 2006.
The 2018 AFL Premiership team. The West Coast Eagles.
G'day everyone. Welcome back to the Big Footy Eagles podcast for another season. We promised you that we were gone and you were probably all pretty relieved about that, but we're back for a little bit of a special, maybe a bit of a monthly review. Might be a regular thing, hopefully maybe a bit of a regular thing, but fingers crossed. All we know is that we're here now to discuss the first four rounds of West Coast Eagles footy. Honey Badger 35 here. I am joined by Keys and I'm joined by Mop, and we'll get to those guys in just a moment. But first of all, just wanted to say thank you to everybody. Number one, who's going to tune into this and jump in the comments, have your say on everything, all the good stuff. But when we did say to everybody, look, we might be taking a bit of a break this year, a couple of factors, just one of those things. The feedback was actually really nice. So really appreciated everybody saying that they liked the show or they're going to miss the show. Even if you said you hated the show, it was just nice to see that you know we're around. So thank you to everybody for your kind words. And hopefully we'll see a few of you in the chat today. Say good day if you are watching along. And if you're listening along after the fact as well, jump in, tell us how we've gone. But gents, as I said, Honey Badger 35 here. I am joined by Keys. Welcome back, Keys. How are things, mate? How's everything been since we last spoke?
Oh, yeah. Well, just... Just a bit of a groundhog day, but yeah, I was just talking. It lost at a collapsed ceiling, which probably is a bit of an omen for the season ahead so far. But hopefully, my ceiling's fixed. Hopefully, we can fix what's going on the field as well.
Nice. See, look at this. He's a pro. He's done this before. That was a good little segue. Also joined by Mop. Mop looking good there in the 2017 West Coast Eagles team photo. Going very well there, Mop. Probably not as good as the team was that year. And as I recall, we all hated him that year, but that's okay. How are things, mate?
Well, I still have a ceiling, so I've got one up over Keys.
Very nice.
Yeah, tracking along, still kicking goals, more goals than we kicked in round three. But yeah.
Again, another good segue. These boys are pros. They've done this before. And look, don't really know what the shape this is going to take. I think it's going to be a bit more of a general discussion because, as I say, we used to do weekly and now we're doing monthly. And how do you sum up four rounds of football? Well, they're all pretty similar, so you could probably do it pretty quickly. And I think with that, gents, let's get into it. I asked you before you came on to come up with a sentence that describes, encapsulates the month that we have seen thus far. And any takers? I suppose, Keys, let's start with you, for example. Season in a sentence. What have you made of things so far?
Okay, I lied when I said I had a season in a sentence because it's a little bit longer than a sentence, but, you know.
Given one instruction.
But you might like it. So it's a couple of sentences. So you ready? Here we go. Hey, yo, read all about it. Gov is back. The West is whack. Harley's tough and there's a diamond in the Hoff. Hewitt can't dance. Is it Jack's last chance? No wins yet, but they'll come, I'll bet. We all love Hunt and Corns is a...
Wow. There's no topping that. Sorry, Mop. See you later, mate. Well, thanks for coming, guys. Thanks for listening to the Big Footy Eagles podcast for another week. Wow. Well done, Keys. I asked for a sentence and I got so much more. That's fantastic. There's a bit to unpack in that and I think we'll get to it throughout. Go on, Mop. Top that. Good luck, buddy.
Glass quarter empty.
Glass quarter empty. All right. We've got a couple of people jumping in the comments as well. Mop, loved yours. Concise. Such a the brief, which is what I appreciated about that one. But as we said, plenty to unpack in that one. A few comments coming through. Is Keys high? No. I think he's just, I don't know, is it Grammy season? I don't know. When are all the awards given out? That's a musical and a half. Is there a ceiling to how many beers Keys can sink? Keys, are you on him tonight? Or are we being responsible?
No, I'm not. No,
don't drink and pod.
No, I'm not. So I might be driving later. So I'm not on the beers.
Oh, there you go. I was concussed for the Sydney game, allegedly. I wasn't. I wasn't on the board as much, unfortunately. I foolishly decided to do a bit of an all-day Bucks party, which is got to see the first half. Was nice. Didn't see as much of the second half as I would have liked, but we will get into the Sydney game just shortly. Good to be back, people, as well. Well done, everybody. Mop, thank you for coming with the sentence. Keys, Thank you for changing the game with that little, I don't know, was it a rap? Was it a song? It was beautiful, whatever it was. Let's dive into what we've liked. I'll quickly give my season in a sentence, which was that the effort is there and the skill is not. And if you're a big footy reader, you will have seen me post that a million times already. Because if I can just lead us off, what have I liked? Well, look, we're 0-4. And let me say, everything you're about to hear is graded on a curve. All right. We're not good. We know we're not good. We're the worst team in footy. There's probably 17 teams that I'd tip against us on a neutral venue and maybe 16 or 17 at home. So we're bad. Don't think I'm getting ahead of myself. But what I've liked this year, boys, is that there's been a bit of shape to the footy where I think we're trying to play our game. And I understand the realities of last year with we were just fielding who had a pulse, but I feel like we were in damage control, complete shock and awe, and just not even turning up last year. Again, a lot of reasons why. But I actually feel like we're trying to play our game style this year. You can see some stuff coming through. Quite simply, we are not good enough to do it. And that's why we are where we are. That's why we're going to finish last. And that's why priority pick conversations are going to hang over us all year. But Mop, for me, I think something that I've seen is that they're trying to do evidently what they've in theory been trying to do for a few years, what they've been telling us they're trying to do for a few years. But I think they're doing it and a little bit of a consequences be damned approach. Now, there are some consequences, Mop, but we'll get to those in due time. What have you liked thus far in the early goings of the season?
I like the fact that we are trying to play a game plan that looks to build for the future. It's more, we're not reactive. We're just kind of sticking to the plan, even if it means it goes bad after one quarter. You know, glass quarter full means we can sustain it for one quarter, last week aside. And that may only be that two neutral sides playing in an unfamiliar, you know, at the SCG, we know what happened last year. We lost by 180 or 150 point loss or something stupid.
Yeah, 170, I think it was actually. Yeah.
Something ridiculous. You know, so I'm kind of grateful that playing Mount Barker we played in?
It was, yep.
Yeah, the neutral venue probably played into our hands in that it wasn't as disastrous as we could have been. Sydney probably didn't play at their best. We probably played well above our floor that we had. But you can see what they're trying to do, even if it falls apart after quarter time because the other teams work out what we're trying to do and they just blitz us and we can't keep up. We don't have the fitness. But I suppose the green shoots are there. They're just really, really small.
Keys, for yourself, anything that you've liked? It's pretty tough when you're 0-4 and you've lost by 10 goals three times already, but what have you liked?
Yeah, I think there's improvement from last year. You can see the effort there. Like you said, the skills aren't there, but I think the turnovers that we've had so far, for the most part, it's been because we're trying to move the game. We're trying to get, you know, it's a guy running through with a handball, things like that. Mm. What we're not doing so much is missing dinky little 20-metre sideways kicks that miss the target. We turn the ball over that way, and that's what we, you know, we're not turning it over in the defensive 50 so much. We're turning it over further up the ground, and you can just see if that connection does get there and we hit that target or the guy takes the ball cleanly, then we're out. But unfortunately, we're fumbling or we're missing the target. You know, we're putting it at the guy's ankles or whatever. The ball turns over, and because we're on the run, it goes back, and the good size exposes, and that's... We've played three very good sides and one okay side. The Bulldogs, I don't think you can say they're a very good side just at the moment. But I think there's a couple of little things. I think for the most part, the result, maybe not the Port game so much because Port sort of, I think it was 16-24 or whatever.
But yeah, the other they two were games, horrible.
I think we were better than the margin sort of indicated. That was partly because of our turnovers, partly because of inaccurate goal kick. I mean, even in like the GWS game and the Bulldogs game, if we kick, instead of kicking 3-12 against the Giants, we kick, 5-13 against the Giants, we flip that to 9-9, and if we kick 8-7 against the Bulldogs, you know, those losses are 45-50 points, not 65-70. And then we've sort of had 3 50-point losses. It's not as bad if we had a kick straight. But like I said, the Port game, probably the other way, if Port kick straight, we're probably staring down 70 or 80 points in that one. But I think... And then the Sydney game was a sort of, you know, a nice little bit of a fill-up because I think I'm not alone in fearing that was going to be an absolute blowout and Sydney get hold of us.
Be horrible.
You know, 15 points down at three-quarter time with the breeze at our back. You look at that and go, well, geez, we're a sniff here. I mean, we did, you know, Sydney sort of turned it up in the last quarter and we couldn't go with them. But, you know, to be within a realistic chance of winning the game at three-quarter time, that was encouraging, I suppose. And you know, we had the Harley show against Sydney as well, which was pretty exciting, you know. Encouraging for the future for what that might mean, and I'm sure we'll talk about Harley a bit more later. But
yeah, you know, I reckon we'll carve out some space to talk about Harley Reid because I wouldn't worry about that. Just going through a few comments. Nice to feel like we have a bit of a midfield that can compete a bit. Feels like it's been eons since that has happened. Comment from Twitch here that says Reid is the second coming of Pritis. Fantastic in the engine room. And good look, like, obviously, you know, yep, fair play. Funny little comment. Trying to work out. And whoever commented that, if you can let us know. Is that a picture of David Duchovny? What's the icon there? I'm going to put it up on the screen for those watching along. Can anyone tell me what that little face is down the corner there? Because if that's X-Files era David Duchovny, I reckon I've played a blinder there. So I'll be interested to find out who it is.
Wasn't that what they did last year where they all dressed up? Isn't that Shannon Hearn dressing up as someone?
No, profile picture. This is riveting audio, by the way. Not his profile picture, the little face next to the words engine room. Bang on, Keys. Yeah. What's going on here? Don't know who that is. Anyway, there you go. Look, exploring a little bit of what we've just talked about there, boys, and Mop, I'll bring you in on this one because I know that sometimes I can be accused of being the optimist, and we've definitely had a few chats, you and I, on the pod over the years and going in a little hard on some players or others, things like that. So it's not all rosy and we will get into where we need to improve. But with that, you look at something like we were talking about the midfield, just getting a little bit more footy and getting our hands on a little bit. Opponents' clearances, I pulled some stats. You know, I love stats. Opponents' clearances this year, 11th in the comp we are. So, you know, there's, what, six, seven teams worse than us? How's my maths? Basically, the opponent gets it out of the middle 36 times a game, or gets the clearance 36 times a game. Last year, 41, and we were dead last in that. So we've improved a little bit there. We're denying the ball a little bit. Our own clearances, pretty much in line with where they were last year, 16th and 16th, 34, 33, round about the same. But I feel like we're not quite the pushover that we were. In a lot of ways. And you go to that Dogs game, we leveled the clearances. Oh, sorry, we smashed them in the clearances, actually. I think we were plus 8 or 9. Leveled the inside 50s. Again, against the Swans, leveled the inside 50s. There is some signs to me that when we clean up the ball use and don't let, like we did with the Giants, don't let them just turn it over on the wing and walk straight back, 1-2 kicks, it's a goal. There's some signs that there's a nugget of a gem of maybe a speck of a footy team under all this. They just got to stick with it, which is frustrating for us.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree, but I think the core issue is our forward line isn't working because we don't have Oscar Allen to provide that class. Jack Darling is all sorts, out of sorts. We're just not scoring the goals to keep the ball down our end. The ball's getting out. They're scoring. I just wonder if we could tighten up the forward half, if we'd be a lot more competitive. We're not going to win, but and I don't necessarily think we need to make too many changes there because we don't have the personnel to make changes. It's just finding the right balance, maybe one player here, there. Do we move Jack to a wing or something up the game so we can get into it and find his form again, because we don't really have anyone to take his place, do we? A senior, well-built forward. So, but you know, you're spot on. The green shoots are there. The midfield's got some promise, and we still got Hewitt and Cully to potentially come back into it to, you know, keep layering on. We've got Clay Hall, who hasn't come in yet. Bergiel's still out injured again. Was it appendicitis or something?
Yeah, something like that. One of the real carnival injuries.
But we're still got a few more, I suppose, tools that we can play when they come good, when they ripen. So it's not a finished product. But yeah, there are parts where we do look pretty good, and a certain second coming of Ben Cousins might have something to do with that if we can stay off the coke and ice.
Yep, very good. Just a quick one for those that were playing along and were absolutely desperate to find the answer on this one. This is the sort of analysis you can get on this footy podcast. So the little emote, the little face that we saw and we were wondering what it was, belongs to somebody named John DeSuno. It's a grayscale image of his face. It's a picture taken from his ID badge, and the emote has very little to do with the specific person. It's just a random Easter egg that is on Twitch. So it's not David Duchovny. Great. Thank you very much. It's sure. Why not? Hey, let's get things back on field, Keys. We talked there about the forward line. And I suppose, look, the inside 50s are actually up this year, if you can believe it, because the scores are right down. And you touched on it. Conversion is dreadful. We've had, as you pointed out, those games there where we keep, what, 3-15 or 3-12, 5-13. going at about 38%. Last year, we were going at about 51%. Do you reckon that's got anything to do with the fact that Oscar Allen isn't playing? I mean, we need to figure something out there, but I can't help but feel that when you plug in a forward at the end of this who can kick 50 goals a year, maybe we could be a little bit closer. We could start stealing some quarters, some halves, eventually some games.
Yeah, I think a part of it is we actually had a proper preseason this year in terms of pretty good numbers on the track and some actual work on some gameplay and things like that. And like, a big part of that was we had a structure set up with our new ruckman, Matt Flynn, in the ruck with Bailey Williams up forward with Oscar Allen, and spent probably, you know, 3 months of preseason training that and bedding that down and everything and like that. And then, you know what, before the first scratch match, Flynn killed himself on a rucking bag. And he's out, and then Oscar blew his knee out after one game. So that whole structure that we trained and everything like that sort of fell, you know, basically fell apart. And we, you know, we're having the ruck Bailey Williams, and we don't have a proper focal target with Oscar Allen out. So I think Flynn sounds about 5 weeks away from what they're saying, so hopefully that'll help settle out down. Oscar's further away, and we're sweating on scans of his knee, which I think are due to be done next week to see if that bone bruising settled down. And hopefully it has. If that's the case, well, then he can start sort of doing a new mini preseason and come back. But if that bone bruising hasn't settled down, then that pushes his return back even further than the 7-8 weeks they're talking about. So it depends. It sort of remains to be seen. Archer Reid, who was the other Reid that we picked up in the draft, he's sort of came in with a knee complaint of his own when he was drafted, and he's only just, so he's about a week or two away, and he will need some waffle games. Maybe he, find some form really quick. He's I think he's about the tallest player on the list, but, you know, you're sort of clutching at straws to hope that the first year tall can have any real impact. Ryan in that forward line, hopefully, if he's over his hemi problems, he'll help because he's another experienced body and we sort of get some around. And
The injuries with him, we know, but he is everything to unlock what this team could be. Obviously, you know, our timeline and his timeline are starting to get out of sync, but God, if he comes back and actually provides.
We get that, and we get those guys sort of playing together. I think one of the things, it's sort of hard to tell on TV, but with the GWS game when it was live, it looked like a side that was still learning to play together. And GWS were the other way. They were a side that you could see had sort of bedded down. They'd been playing together. They knew where to go. They knew where to be. They knew what each other were doing. Whereas we were sort of running to spots and the guys weren't quite sure what each other was doing, and there wasn't that quite connection. We sort of handball to a guy and the ball would go off a metre behind him or something like that, or the guy we handballed to wasn't expecting it. So once we sort of get these guys playing together a little bit, and a good thing, again, I'll sort of go back to numbers on the track, is we can then start to train these things. The last 2 years, we spoke about in the pod one of the other times where, I went to a training mid-season. I think we had like 10 or 12 players on the track. The rest were running laps or walking laps or things like that. Now you go to training and there's 30, 35, something on the track. So if they want to do a match sim, they've actually got some numbers there that they can do it, and they can actually train stuff down and work it out. So it's a long process, take a while, but you can sort of see how the first building block, I think, is clearances and the contested work, and that's, you can see where the work's gone in, and there's been an improvement there, like you said. Then once we've got it, we've sort of focused on that, but we haven't focused on so much that when we do get it, focused on how to keep it and what to do with it when we've got it. So it's kind of like
that's next.
Yeah, you know, like a dog chasing a car tire. It's like, well, fuck now. What do we do now? I don't know.
Mike, we've had some comments here, and I'm torn on whether to throw them up now or maybe later on in the show, because there is a discussion to have. But let's get straight into it, then. That's fine. Is there any thought, based off the Tom Barras interview, where he almost blew out Reed's tyres with the pump up, that with Jamison and Edwards and the back line settling, do we throw Tommy sexual harassment Barras up forward, or do we keep him there because it's settling? Also, the second coming of Gov. So where I'm going with that, Mop, is I was going to ask, let's talk about some players that have impressed us. You know, who's impressed you? And I think one of the first ones, I think the big two for most Eagles fans this year would be Elliot Yeo's back, and we can talk to that in a second. But what about Jeremy McGovern? Where's this Jeremy McGovern been? He's been in the rehab room, I suppose, but he's out there on the field. His teeth are, you know, falling out one by one, but his footy, Mop, is very, very strong again. So what do we do with that back line? We just lean into, wow, we're losing by 10 goals, so is it working? But it is sort of working.
Yeah, and look, McGovern, purple patch, well, that's forbidden. You can't use a purple patch because of the Freo Mop. But yeah, look, he's looking rock solid. He's solid, and he's looking not quite career best, but he's looking as good as he has in the last three or four. So I hadn't even considered sending old mate Barras up forward. I like it. I've heard the argument to send McGovern up forward, but when he's playing as well as he is, you just don't.
Yeah.
Whereas Barras, until last week, has looked really out of sorts and really behind it. And it looks like he's playing sore, just like he did last year.
Round one, he was, obviously we had the interviews about his back and just how bad that went. I think round one, he got his confidence really rattled. He got a hold of early and just kind of got shook. But I think from round two onwards, he's sort of just, I'm not trying to intercept. I'm not trying to do anything fancy. I'm just going to spoil. Against GWS, he had about 400 spoils. And as you say, yeah, Mop, I agree with you. Last week, he did sort of look, all right, I'll fly, I'll intercept, I'll get back into the less simple things.
Yeah, but as I said earlier, what's happening up forward now isn't working. So we're not going to win too many games. So sending Barras up forward and trying Jamison at centre half back or whatever, why not? Jamison, had we done it around one pod, I would have given him the Bailey Williams treatment that happened after round one last year. I thought, I didn't agree with the praise at all. I thought he looked rushed. I thought he looked not uncomposed. I thought, what's this dude doing? But he's growing on me. I liked what he did last week. I liked his intensity. It doesn't always get it right with his decision-making, but it comes back to a like. What do I like? We're playing young blokes who last year, Simpson would have defaulted with the old brigade, the Gaffs, or Jermaine Jones, for example, who last year played pretty much almost every game he was fit for, whereas now he's languishing in the waffle. We played Harry Barnett.
Witherden, after round one, they put a line through him as well. The Gaff Witherden chat that round was very telling.
So you could take it as a like or a dislike. I like the fact that they're not playing every week. That, and apparently someone was saying, it might have been Duffield, that this is a Don Pike push, that the credits brigade needs to be rolled out. But I don't like the fact that they're still lingering in the emergencies and they're almost there. I mean, you've got Dewar. I mean, yeah, for every Rawlinson that's getting a call-up, you've got Dewar who is playing well that could, in theory, get a game. So if you want to talk about Chesser now, then, or we can leave it for later.
We'll get into Chess in a second, because I think there's a good conversation to be had there. And thank you. We did have a comment earlier just about sending Chesser back to the waffle maybe to get a bit of confidence. So thank you to Jay for sending that one through. Migs in the comments here is saying maybe for this week that's something to try. Richmond's forward line quite small. Eagles going in pretty tall, not 2016 Mitch Brown in the pocket tall, but pretty tall, but also young. So it's that one where you go, we're a little bit tall. Maybe we're overcompensating in that regard, but you also don't expect any of them to get a hold of their opponent. They're all finding their feet still and finding their size a little bit. So
yeah,
we'll wait and see what goes on there.
I posted on Big Footy today that I thought that with Richmond's forward line, you know, when you look at it, you've only got Kaziski's are only a real genuine tall target, and then that Lafau, whatever, how, you know, hopefully I pronounce that right. I don't know. I don't particularly care. You know, the rest of their forward line is 187 centimetres or smaller. So, and we've got McGovern, Barras, Jamison and Rotham down there. So you sort of look at that and you think, well, you know, at least one of those guys is struggling to find a matchup. So, I wouldn't be surprised at all if we send Barras forward. Maybe not at the first bounce, because the last time we tried that...
got kicked three goals in about 2 minutes.
Yeah, and he got four or five goals in about 7 or 8 minutes or something stupid. So so maybe not to start with, but I think that might be something that Simpson has in his back pocket. And I think we're far better off sending Barras down up forward than than McGovern, because I just think the thing that I like about McGovern is he intercepts, but he's generally a pretty good user of the ball. And he sometimes bites off a little bit too much, but at least he's trying something. So and quite often if he hits one of those kicks, it does get us out and we can be away. So whereas Barras, sort of, he's a bit slower to move the ball on, and his kicks are a bit more floaty and sort of up and under sort of kicks. He hasn't got that sort of confidence to sort of take a kick on the way that McGovern does. So
Gov loves the one-step kick, as is being pointed out. But as you say, yeah, so I think there's a level of command with Gov where he goes, give me the ball, let's do something with it.
Yeah, so I think we look better with Gov down back than what we would with him up forward. And Brass up forward, you know at least he'll provide a contest, and he's probably not going to get. He might not mark it every time, but he's not going to get outmarked either. I have a concern that we've gone one tall too many this week against Richmond. But let's wait and see.
Yep, fair enough. Quickly whipping through some more names just of guys that I've liked this year. Yo, we talked about very briefly, but I mean, how much do you need to say? He looks like a beast. He looks healthy. He wants the footy. He's always had a bit of the bang it on the boot and just sort of let's get some distance, let's get things going. But I think with where we're at the moment, I think that's very appreciated and it just gives us a chance. Kelly, somewhat quietly, I feel like he's just been ticking away and he's faded in and out of games, but I think his best has been our best. I think he's had quarters where he just looks like far and away our best player. Then he goes quiet for a bit, so it's what it is. Love Jamie Cripps. I love Hunt. I tell you what, his game against Sydney was great, but I think he's been giving us quite a lot and it was a bit of an odd acquisition. It got a mixed reviews. Yes, we need some push off the halfback or off the wing. Does his age profile fit what we need? You still need to trot out a team, and I think he's offered us quite a lot. So a couple of guys there that I've really liked. Keys, anybody else that's impressed you thus far in the season?
Hoff, I've really liked. I think we'll get to Chesser, and if we sort of maybe, you know, Chesser for a pick 14's maybe a little bit iffy. I think we're balancing out where with Hoff was at pick 31. Well, I think we've got a really, at a minimum, a really solid, reliable defender. And I think he can be a bit more than that once he finds his feet properly. He's put on, you know, he's probably put on about 10 kilos since he arrived from the club.
It was about four kilos when he arrived.
He looked like he'd have to run around the shower to get wet.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, when I went to training at the start, I had actual trouble picking him out because I was like, who's that guy? Because he looked so much bigger. You could tell he was bigger. And so far this year, I think he's taken Rioli, Toby Green, Cody Waitman, and Tom Papley. And I think in all of those games, he's come out on points. He's come out on top against, you know, four pretty dangerous forwards. And Toby Green's one of the best players in the game. He's not just one of the best four smallies. I've really liked what he's
did
done.
He kick one goal? I know he kicked the opening goal of the game out the back. Was that his only goal
Green,
for the game?
Because I think with Greeny, I only got one, I think, and that was and he might have kicked a couple of points.
1-1.
So Hoff, really like that, and he's got that capacity now where he'll get the strength where he can stand someone a bit taller as well. So it's not just smalls. He's been of the young group, apart from the Messiah. He's been the real one to stand out.
All right, Mop, now you wanted to have a bit of a chat about Campbell Chesser, and I think having a gamble at maybe the direction this might go, I'll cede the floor to you, and then we might get into some things maybe that we've disliked or certainly not liked as much in the season. So, Mop, over to you. What have you made of Chess?
I thought round one, he's like, all right, look, I'm really going to kick on here. You know, prove all the doubters wrong. You know, my time to shine, yeah. Yeah, you could have had Johnson from Freo, but you got me instead and I'm your man. But there is a case to be made that he should be dropped to the waffle. He was absolutely anonymous last week and he fades out of games and he doesn't really kick on. But the reality is, if we're going to lose Chesser, it means someone like Gaff or Witherden's coming back in, and it's just counterintuitive of what the team's trying to do. I would rather him push on and get four disposals and really, really see if he's going to make it than go backwards. Because right now, until we get that the other players, the Clay Halls fit, I don't think that they're brave enough to start playing Rawlinson through the middle or off a wing. He's a small forward. That's what he's going to be, you know? Like, would you rather have Gaff? Would you rather have Chester? I know which camp I'm in. I argue that Gaff has a place on the squad, in the squad, given he had the deal. I mean, no, we all wish he wasn't on the big dollars he is for the next 12 months, but he is. So his job should be, barring an injury crisis like we've had the last 3 years, to mentor the young blokes in the waffle. He shouldn't be getting anywhere near a team sheet. But the trade-off is then you got to put up with Chester not potentially delivering what we'd hoped.
So just on Gaff there, and I agree entirely with you. Look, we are where we are. We've spoken for 20 minutes about things that we've liked in a season where we're 0-4. We all, I think, unanimously agree we're going to come last, or it would be a huge surprise if we didn't. So let's, you know, reality is reality. But the one thing I will say about Gaff is that I think as an emergency, he is the perfect option because we play a Sunday 2 p.m. game. All right, Gaff held over as the emergency. Who gives a shit? Rawlinson gets to play footy. You know, these young guys get to play a game of waffle at the very least. I don't love the idea of somebody missing a week of waffle. And we've seen over the years through injuries, through the 2020 COVID season, through all sorts of reasons, this, that, and the other, it has been difficult to get young guys on the park in a meaningful way, not in a crap, play an unready Jamison at fullback against the Roos because we're using the top-up players. We found it difficult to get meaningful footy into the kids. Waffle footy is meaningful footy for kids, and I'm very happy to hold over Gaff, and we don't need him. He's an emergency that doesn't get used, so guess what? He happened to not play footy this week. That's a better allocation of resources to me. So I don't mind seeing him on the emergency list. I don't want to start seeing him get close to the team.
As long as he's not the sub.
Even at his best, he was about the worst sub choice. What he does well has never been suited to the sub role, Australian. I agree with you entirely. Yeah,
he's an endurance player that doesn't really have any special skill set. He could just outrun the boy next to him, which now he's sub struggling role. To do that. You know, you absolutely wasted bringing him on 5 minutes ago in the end of the third quarter.
Yes. No, 100%. 100%. Interesting. No, I agree. And everybody have you say, look, it's been great, actually. We're getting quite a lot of comments through. So, I don't know, people must have missed us, or maybe they were just sick of us once a week before. But once a month seems the go, boys, because... it's all happening in the comments, so keep firing away, guys, and we will move on. Keys, give us something that you have disliked this season in an 18th place 0-4 start.
Disliked. Pretty disappointed at Jermaine Jones's form. He's been a favourite of mine, and I wanted to see him in the side. But when he did come in, he really butchered it. He hurt us really badly. So, which is a shame because I think we could do with his run off half back, but we just can't deal with his turnovers. So he's been a little bit of a disappointment. A couple of the younger guys, like Merrick and Long, have sort of been okay, but they haven't been great. A bit the same as Chester. You sort of thought, oh, hopefully they'd be, having a little bit more impact than what they've had. I think our ability to stop sides on the spread has been a real concern. And I think one of the things is I've sort of generally tried to keep a bit of an eye on that Telstra tracker on the AFL site. And I think I'm right in saying, and someone can probably be wrong if they can be fucked, but I don't really care. I think the four games we've run further than the Oppo and against Port Adelaide we did.
Definitely against the Dogs we did, because I remember looking it up.
Yeah. So
by quite a way as well.
Generally we've run further, which means the work rate is up and the guys are trying. But it Sydney, also perhaps indicates that we're running to the wrong spot. Because in the Port game I particularly noticed it because Boak just sat out on that outer wing, and every time it got tight, Port would just bomb it out to him, and he was sitting by himself, and there was no one within fucking 50 metres of him, and then they'd go forward, and it happened a lot. So what that means is the guys they're not holding their position out wide, and they're maybe running into the contest, and then when the ball goes over their head, they're having to run and chase to try and make up ground, and that's why we're running further, because we're in the, like I said, we're running to the wrong spots, and that's just something that we need to get hold of. And I thought, look, to be honest, in the Sydney game, I thought we were better at that. You know, Sydney weren't able to get the ball sort of into the corridor and out onto the fat side and run. We forced them to go down the line far more often. That fell away in the last quarter, but for the most part, that sort of worked. So that's sort of working. it kind of, it sort of looked like it looks like it might have turned the corner, but our injury list was still pretty long up until the last week or two. We got back up to sort of 12 or 13 players again there, and you started to think, well, what the fuck's going on? It's a new, we've changed our S&C team and everything like that, but we've still got players dropping like flies, but we're starting to get those guys back, and maybe it's not, you know, the sort of, you know, Pike in particular was one saying, you know, don't panic about the injury list, it's different to other years and things like that. But we touched on it earlier, I'd love to have Flynn and Allen out there and Ryan. You know, and then we've lost, well, we can't do anything about Bergell's appendix apart from remove it, which we have. And then, you know, we've got, who else? You know, the other ones like Cully and Shooter. Cully and Shooter.
We've got about four best 22, I think.
Yeah, there's a couple of long-term sort of ones that are hangovers from last year. But that was, yeah, that was a little bit frustrating earlier where we were sort of, you know, we're back down to, you know, sub-30 available players and you're going, oh, geez, here we go again. But if we can hold what we're doing now with I think there's six on the injury list this weekend, plus a dopey suspension. Around five or six is pretty, that's kind of normal. You can sort of deal with that. And hopefully we get, we get Flynn and Allen back in the time frames there, and Bazo for that matter, because we need him back getting development, and then eventually Hewitt. But that's a bit of a longer term problem that, you know, that might end up being, we don't know for sure. We don't really know yet. That might be that's probably my main dislike is I really wanted to see Hewitt this year pair up with Harley. I think those two guys could really trouble sides, but having Hewitt miss what will be at least 2/3 of the season, that's really disappointing. But we've taken a long-term view in him. It's a lot, well, he might miss a year, but that's so we can get 12 out of him from the back end.
Just unpacking a little bit of that, and Mop, I'll throw to you in just a sec. One of the things that Keyes was talking about there was the transition defense and how easy we are to score against on the spread. And what I'm about to say feels more redundant than most of the things I say, but I feel like the two main ways we're getting scored against are we either turn it over just brutally. I mean, handball it to the other guy at the halfback flank, or, you know, a big looping pass up to the center circle. Really brutal turnovers that come straight back over your head. Or it's transition end to end. And I know the argument would be, all right, well, what other ways can you score? But I don't feel like teams are getting it out of the middle and going clearance, 1-2-3 goal. I don't feel like there's a stoppage on the wing and we lose the clearance and it rattles around a bit and they force it forward a bit and push and shove is what it is. You know, I feel like teams either get it straight off of our boot or they get it straight after a behind from us. I feel like they've been, would account for at least 50% of our goals. I don't have the numbers to back it up. I could probably shout out again to Alisana or Alsana, however we're pronouncing it on Big Footy. Awesome, awesome threads with the video review. So maybe, you know what, maybe next month I'll even look at score sources or something. But Mop, for me, I just feel like if we're not giving the ball straight to the opposition, they're just taking it on the spread from a kick-in or from deep in the back line. I think between the arcs and even at stoppages inside defensive 50, I think we're cracking in all right. But how do we stop the spread? How do we stop, as Keyes has pointed out, we're running further, we're running arguably harder, but probably running incorrectly. You know, that feels like a thing that is not to do with being young or maybe to do with being naive. That could be something that they could address, you know, in the short term.
Bit to unpack there, but the top of the list I had had written was Duggan's disposal. Now,
okay,
this is a guy, this is our leader, that he's playing off halfback. He is our standalone captain with Oscar Allen being in the hospital room. And you just know he gets the ball and he gets any other pressure, he's going to butcher it, turn it over, and they're attacking off half forward just like that. And bang, goal, bang, reset, and rips, repeat. He's never been a natural disposal, but this is, and we all knew it was iffy, but Jesus Christ, this season has been as bad as I can remember. Don't have the numbers to back me up, but
I feel like there's been some games where it's really stood out.
I'm going to go in the back for him a little bit. He was really bad in the Port game, and I think he had 10 clangers for the game, which was double the next worst. And I think most of those 10 came in the first half. He was really, really bad. After that, I know the GWS game. I know there was a lot of comments on the threads about how bad Duggan was and this, that, and the other. And I went back and I watched Alisana's video of Duggan, and it wasn't near as bad as what people were made out. And because I was at the ground, I sort of thought, oh, I thought Duggan was all right. And you saw all these comments about Duggan's trash and stuff. And I thought, fuck, maybe I'm sort of misreading it. So I went back and looked through his highlights. So, mate, for the most part, he was pretty good.
I feel like he does a lot right. It's just the final ball.
I think the thing with Duggan for me is that when he does fuck up, he doesn't half screw it. He goes full deep and makes a real clanger. Like if he's gonna do it, he does it horrendously. I think his bad ones actually stand out. And that's the way. Look, and I think it was. I think in the Sydney game, I think one of the commentators highlighted it a little bit and said, you know, and there were a couple of ones where they were pretty bad. But I think we started trying to get him through the midfield. I think we're bedding him down a little bit more off half back than what we originally intended to use. But I think he's better at half back than through the midfield. I don't think he's a mid, and he also takes opportunities. The intention was to rotate Reid and Duggan through the midfield, and I think it's become pretty obvious that we're better with Reid in the middle and Duggan off half-back than the other way, and I think that's Simpson's. He's picked that up, and he's just said, oh, no, that's not working, so let's shove it. And I think a lot of critics of Simpson, and there's valid parts to it, but I do think he looks like he's coaching a bit better this year. I think he's, you know, you touched on earlier about some of the selections with guys. Gaff was always going to be the canary in the coal mine for me on selection. I was like, what happens when Gaff has a bad game? Will he drop him? He had one bad game and he dropped him. He's got his hands tied with Darling a little bit in terms of there's not many options. But I think I think if Allen and Flynn were both fit, I think Darling would be in the waffle with Gaff. But we haven't got those two, so he's not. So I think there's some things with Simpson that I think you know, he's you can sort of see what he's sort of trying to do as a coach. I think he's been a little bit better this. He's had a bit to work with. But we'll leave discussion about his future for later because that's a whole episode of this.
Well, you never know. He might be sacked by the time the next monthly one comes around. You never know. Mop dug into some numbers there. You just piqued my curiosity. So I've gone clangers. Players who've played at least two games, what are their average number of clangers? Tied for third in the league is Jermaine Jones. So Hayden Young's number one, Brody Grundy's number two, and then Dangerfield and Jermaine Jones are tied for third. Slightly different caliber of player there. So he was going at six a game before we sort of nicked him off. Tied for seventh is Duggan with 5.5 per game. So that's
who's he sort tied of with?
Nank the Tank. He's tied with Toby Nankervis. He is one behind Rowan Marshall and he's slightly ahead of Connor Nash.
He's behind Ruckman.
Yeah, well, you know, and elite midfielders. And Jermaine Jones. So skills was one of my points and it all feeds into this. And Mop, I'll open the floor back if we want to take it into a different direction or more of the same. But pulled a number, once again, going stat heavy. 19% of our disposals are turnovers, according to the AFL website. So last year it was 18%, pretty much the same. One in five, we give it back to you. There's no winning like that, but... Yeah.
No,
putting the positive spin on it, you take those away, it reduces the opportunities, is what it is. We obviously know why we are where we're at the moment. Mop, anything else that you've seen this year that you'd like to have a gripe about?
Yeah, I just don't like there's no real cohesion in the kickouts. Okay, we turn it over once. It's like, okay, who's going to take it? And it's random. Is it going to be Hunt? Is it going to be McGovern? It doesn't seem to have a plan B. It's just random. And as Paul said in the comments, just kick it right. Well, we looked really good last week against Sydney when we had a plan and it was working and we stuck to it. So maybe do some work during the week. And the other real thing I didn't like was Marich getting hospitalised by Jack Dowling's big fat knee in what was a pretty innocuous contest. Like,
it's a bit rough. They're crashing a pack. It's a bit rough.
No, I'm not having to go with Jack Dowling. I just didn't like it.
Okay.
It's real, just shithouse luck.
No, because I saw a lot of people on Big Footy like, oh, typical now Jack's done this. And I was like, settle down. There's a two on the crash.
Just, I don't know if it's the burial ground or someone's got a voodoo doll, but it's just shit luck.
All right, we've got a comment here. Harley Chat Wen, and I'm impressed, guys. We're nearing up to 50 minutes of this, and we've barely talked about Harley Reid. So we will do that. I feel like we've covered off most of the things in a general sort of way, but hey.
I just got to get the box of tissues if we're going to start chatting about Harley.
Oh, what are you sad about, Keys? Any, are you sad about something?
I'll get the Vaseline.
Right. Keys, any last dislikes, and then we can get into Harley chat.
I'll give the tissues to that fucking angry, rugged, bloody Sam McClure. Give him a box of tissues.
little bit of sizzle. We got some heroes and villains coming up later on, and yeah, I think he might feature.
Yeah, he's got a section dedicated to him. Don't worry.
That's it. All right. Player spotlight then. Harley Reid, shall we do it? Keys,
yeah.
What do you like about this kid?
I love his attitude. He just, I think there was a couple of things when we were looking at, you know, the whole discussion about should we split the pick and everything like that. And it was like, well, you know, he doesn't, you know, there was a talk from, you know, from Dickhead about, well, he doesn't want to come here. He doesn't like WA and things like that. I mean,
Pick him.
Yeah, you look like him.
Yeah, I know. It's honestly, that's a nightmare. I will say that. I'm aware that I look like him.
Harley, yeah, he denied him and everything like that. And there was, I mean, I had concerns, and it was like, well, you know, how would he handle the spotlight of being the number one pick with the attention that came with it? And I don't think anyone envisaged the sort of fucking garbage that the West spewed out over him. I mean, that continues to be ridiculous. So he's had, coming into the season, had a huge amount of pressure on him. And he's just embraced it. And the other thing was, I think there was a couple of press conferences before the season started, and you know, people were worried and saying, yeah, well, you know, opposition sides are going to come after him, they're going to put physical pressure on him, how's he going to deal with it and everything like that. He doesn't need protection, he goes looking for it.
You he's know, a prick.
Someone there to whack. Yeah, he's got that real. You know, he said himself, during the week, you know, he plays with the swagger and everything like that, and he's just. He's got a huge amount of confidence. Everything you've seen from him over pre-season and the lead up to the games and everything like that, he looks like he's loving it here. He's forming really good relationships with guys at the club. You know, there's photos of him where he's playing with some of the, you know, his teammates' kids or Luke Shuey's kids or something like that. You know,
you're falling in love. You're looking for all that stuff too.
There's a photo of him at a Wildcats game babysitting Luke Shuey's kids and stuff like that. So there's all those. He's just, you know. And then the thing, he kicked that goal, he grabbed the jumper, and it was like, yeah, he's there. I think it was the practice game against Adelaide, and Rory Laird tried to tackle him, sort of got him in a bit of a dump tackle, and you sort of thought, oh, here you go. And Yo was pretty, to his credit, was pretty quick to go and try and grab Laird and pull him off. And then Yo sort of kind of looked at him and said, oh, fuck, Harley's got this. And bloody Harley ended up on top of Laird anyway. So he can handle himself, and he's not shy to have a crack at the oppo. You know, I think he's everything that we sort of hope we might get, and maybe a little bit more. You know, time will tell, you know, how long he stays here. We've not got a crystal ball and everything like that, but like I said, the only thing is you can just see what's in front of you, and that's he loves the place, and you can sort of, with what he's doing as an 18-year-old, you sort of fast forward that 4 or 5 years and start to think about what he might be like once he's got a proper tank and once he's got his body properly hardened. He's going to be a pretty scary player, he's fun. He's fun to watch, and we saw that. We've only seen him at the home once. That was against GWS, and already, yeah, it was only 5 minutes in, and everyone was jumping off their feet, going, "Bloody hell, look at this kid go!" I'm a huge fan. Glad we got him, and I think for a club, you know, where we're at as a club, as an organisation, everything like that, what he brings, you can't buy that, and it's. I'm so glad we didn't. There's, you know, the dipwits over say we should have split the pick so we got more players in. There's a thing with him, what he brings to the club, that splitting the pick would never have done.
I think that's a really good point. And Mop, I'll throw it over to you in a sec. I don't have too much to say about Harley that hasn't been said. Anything I do say, I think he's going to be heroes and villains sort of media chat. But that is the thing I will say that I noticed against GWS. Keys points it out. He had that little 1-2-3, bit of a, you know, don't argue here and going this way there. Even last week against the Swans, taking on all the tackles, breaking 7 or 8 tackles or whatever he had. There is an element to that. We'll talk about Jinby later. Everyone loved Ruben Jinby last year. And we're like, this kid's going to be really good. Hewitt showed in flashes some bits and we go, oh, this kid's going to be really good. That's good. We need some kids who are going to be really good. But you didn't have a whole stadium waiting with bated breath for Ruben Jinby to get the footy, which is not a knock on him. And as I said, there's plenty of Ruben Jinby chat to be had. And I think he's going to be a huge asset for us. Love the boy. But as Keys has pointed out, I think that is sort of the intangible that maybe I'd overlooked. I wasn't a big split the pick guy. I wanted Harley Reid. You know, but good. That's fine. Great. When he got the footy against the Giants, the whole stadium lifted. I'm really wrapped. I'm really excited to see him. This week, obviously, they've built the Dusty versus Harley battle of the fend-offs bullshit. It's fine. He's going to come along a little slow. He'll show bits and he'll show pieces and we don't need him to be a 30-touch-a-game guy, but there is that element of when he gets the footy, the whole stadium goes, oh, hell yeah. And we have been a club that has had fuck all to sell for a while and now we've actually got something to sell.
Yeah, spot on. You don't, when you're as bad as us, you need something to get excited about. And I was watching that Sydney game last week thinking, this kid is the bee's fucking knees. He is everything we could have wanted from that pick one. And I hand on heart say, I thought we were going to split the pick if pick two was involved. But
yep.
It's a moot point because that never eventuated. North Melbourne wanted to have their cake and eat it too, which is fair enough. They can dictate the price that they wanted to buy for, but the trade was never there. So let's not, you know, let's keep the facts real. The trade was never on because the price was never met. It was never a matter of, oh, should we sell or should we not? No, because it was never on. But for what you could have been, for what the price we paid, for what a pick one could be, given how bad we are, there was nothing more really he could be doing. He could be getting 30 touches, but they're not going to be 30, the 15, 18, 20 touches of what he's doing that is pure class. That is pure excitement, taking the game on, putting blokes on their ass, knocking blokes over, just like, yeah, fuck you. I am King Dick here, you know, from this 18-year-old kid. Pulling the shirt, I just love it. I love the fact the boys get around him. You know, like you can see Elliot Yeo run into him when he kicks that goal. It just like Keith, I'm a bit of a fan, and I just think he is the medicine to this giant turd burger. But just your point around Jinby and around Hewitt, you're right. I just hope that when all these boys come in, they can build that cohesion that they, you know, used to be Nick Nat to Shuey to Kennedy, you know, like they can work out how they all play together. Because obviously Hewitt and Reid haven't played together yet, so there's that to come. But look, there is something to be excited about.
Very good, boys. Well, look, maybe throw the player spotlight back up and we'll quickly chat very briefly about anyone that we've yet to get to. And apologies, we have had a few questions come through that I'm not sure we'll get time to do. We'll get into some heroes and villains in a second. Reading out a few more comments, though. This one from Moss on Twitch says, he won't fix all the things, but what Reid brings is raw passion that we haven't had probably since Cuz. And comment here saying, I'm going to my first game since...
The other number nine, Nat, I think he's it fits the number nine. The history of the nine is Cousins into Nick Nat into Harley. I think that that all lines up.
Nah, lovely stuff. There is a bit of lineage there. Another comment here. I'm going to my first game since JK versus Richmond with a minute to go back in the good times because this kid looks awesome. Player spotlight, boys. And very briefly, if you want to think of one player that maybe we've not talked about yet, I'll throw Jinby out as a bit of a freebie. So if you've got another one, please think about that. First guy I want to bring up, which there was a question about, is Jake Waterman. I think he's working his tail off. He's not a super polished 1A, All-Australian, first option caliber key forward. He's not. He's being asked to play that role because one of the things I didn't get to in the dislikes is I think we are sacrificing our forward structure to try and not congest the ball, but just make it not quite so, you know, close the gate a little. Gate's not quite so open. Then we win the ball and we have to wait on the wing and wait and wait and wait because all of our forwards pushed really high up to actually give us an outlet option. So I think Jake's being asked to do very thankless things. He's not a 1A forward. He's running 15 Ks a game, which is absolutely cooked. And in a team where he's your third best forward, you're in business. In a team where he's your best leading forward, you're not. Guess what? We're not. But I just think, you know what? There's no hand-wringing needed here. It's a simple plug and play for where we're at. No Oscar. Jack Williams is a kid. Jack Darling's body's starting to give up on him. He's trying his heart out. God bless him, but he's just not there still. Jack Waterman just gets a Guernsey for me. It's a bit of a no-brainer. Mop, any players that you want to bring up? Is there one guy you want to discuss that we haven't touched on yet?
Just good call with Snakey. I love what he brings. I love watching him gallivant up the wing and just present an option, and he always tries. And for a dude that was that sick, we weren't even sure was going to be on the list for a little while.
I forgot about that. Far out.
Yeah, mid last season, there was a big debate. That surprised me, but, you know, and that was before the illness. Some people thought he was fighting for his career. Now, I love watching Snake play. I love what he brings. He is a limited player. He's not a star, but he just leaves it all on the table, and I love him. Bailey Williams, he wasn't meant to be our number one starting number one rock anymore. He was meant to be that hybrid forward, drift forward, because we got him big Matt Flynn, but obviously Flynn, the voodoo curse got him too. Yeah. And Williams is just playing really well. I was worried how he would go against Nankervis. I thought he might get worked over against the bigger body, but he was the one that I thought looked better because he just kept running and running and running and just ran the game out looking better. So, you know, for a dude I bagged out quite famously after round one last year and told him to get off the list, you know, he just continues to impress and push and just keeps on winning our love.
Nah, good call. I think English, you know, everybody who's listened to this for any period of time knows I'm not a Tim English guy. Good luck to him. He's good. He's good if you can get him, but I don't think you pay for him. I think you use your assets differently to that. And I will say, look, did English move around the ground well? Did he get a lot of touches around the ground? Yep. Swung forward, kicked some goals. Great.
Just on English real quick. I did read that I think John Ralph expects English to sign a new deal by the mid-season bye.
Good. Hope he does. Wrap for him.
That surprised me.
Thrilled for him. Hope he gets a huge house and a lovely car and a lovely life over there in Victoria. I do not want him on our list. He's really good. You don't pay for him. You know, I think Bailey was beat him in the hitouts. We won the clearances. We leveled the inside 50s against an all-Australian caliber ruckman. Dean Cox is Dean Cox because he was the best in the ruck as well. English is a really decent tall midfielder and a very interesting ruck hybrid sort of proposition. Bailey Williams, fine by me. We will get into Jinbi in just a sec, Keys, but if there's one last guy you want to talk about as well, please let us know.
No, I think most of it's been covered off. So I did see the comment about Jamison as a key back, and he's been a he has been. We spoke about him a bit earlier, so but he's been a sort of pleasant surprise. He's sort of been a sort of an accidental success in that you wouldn't have done it, but he's showing some signs that he might actually develop into a useful. He won't ever be a superstar, but he might be a useful centre half back in the years to come, at least as a right. as a lockdown type.
Keys, we will we'll stay with you on this one very quickly. I think Mop, quick comment on Jack Williams, and then we'll get into some Ruben Jinbi chat.
I'll be honest, I forgot Jack Williams was playing last week. He was pretty quiet.
He kicked a goal. Didn't he bother kicking a goal really early?
Before he kicked his goal, yeah. Oh, I was like, right. Wait, Jack Williams is playing. But what he does do, it's limited in batches. It looks good. He might actually be quite handy when he gets, you know, a few games, a few years under his belt. I think maybe we have a player there.
Just keep pumping games. That's it. Pump games into him. Keys, Jinbi, there's been a bit of hand-wringing about, look, good signs, great body, but what is he? Is he quick? Sometimes he is, sometimes he's not. Is he clean with the footy? No, you know, he has disposals that look horrible. You know, his okay ones are okay. His bad ones are very starkly, they stand out. They're not good disposals. But what have you made of his season so far? And go on then, let's project out what he is after four games of footy this year.
I think he's developing. I think it was a GWS game in the second half. He actually, Simpson let him off the chain a bit. He had maybe 14 or 15 disposals in the second half or something like that. Fucked a few of them up, but yeah, he sort of showed that he can find the ball, which is a bit of a knock on him. I think his main problem at the moment, he's not, I don't think you could say he's a natural midfielder, not yet at least. So I think he's a bit reactive in that he's sort of, he's there and he kind of gets led into the footy by his opponent a little bit. And because he just has that little bit of a delay, it means that his opponent sort of gets to the ball first, gets his hands on it, and if he slips the tackle, then he's out and away sort of thing. So that can improve with a bit of, you know, bit more time in the middle and learning how other guys play and things like that. I'd like him, you know, just to say, look, just go, just don't worry about your man. Just there's a ball, go get it. Just fucking go after it. You're bigger than everybody else. Just steamroll through them and try and get the footy. But he needs a bit of time to read where to go to be able to do that, because it's a difficult thing to do sometimes. So he's coming along. I think people have to remember he's still only a second year player. He's still developing. He hasn't got 5 or 6 super talented players around him just yet. So he's been asked to do a lot. I just give him a bit of time. I don't think he's going to be, you know, Clayton Oliver midfielder or things like that. Island Phil has sort of compared him, so maybe to say someone like a Jack Crisp at Collingwood. I think that's fairly fair. And if we get that level out of Jinbi, then I think we'll be relatively happy. Because you'll complement the other bits we've got pretty well, if that's the case.
Mop, any thoughts on Rubes?
Yeah, I'll preface it by saying I love the guy, and I think he's a really important piece to the puzzle that we're trying to build. He is kind of the strong everyman to the X Factor, you know, A-grade star that is Harley Reid and kind of the mercurial hot and cold player that I think Elijah Hewitt will be. I do think we probably overpaid for him at pick 9. I was just having a look at the draft there, like who we took then, you know, who we took in and around. There's probably no one in isolation we probably missed. I mean, there was talk maybe we'd take Jai Clark, maybe, but he ended up at Geelong. There was talk maybe we'd have to stretch to get Ed Allen, who's doing all right for Collingwood's VFL side. But I just hope they work out how best to use him, because I just don't think we've quite got it right yet. And there are times where he looks like he is, I think, yeah, as you put it, reactive as opposed to just playing a natural instinctive game, and his game is struggling for it. But he'll be right. He'll come good. He's a second year player after all. And I like the fact he's built like a brick shit house, and he's got a dyed blonde curly mullet kind of thing. And he's just an absolute tank. I just hope that he uses his size more, takes the game on a bit more, and go from there.
I think if we find a way to use him as a bit of a battering ram, you know, and just so we've got someone like Reid and Hewitt and things like that. We've got those guys and Kelly while we still have him. If you've got Jimby just bulldozing people and making space for those guys, he's a massive unit. He is a massive unit. I mean, when you see him up close, he's enormous.
If he's doing it, Jinby's doing it, it means Elliot Yeo doesn't have to, because Elliot Yeo doesn't have the body to be the player that Elliot Yeo wants to be.
Yeah.
Someone tell him that.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, Elliot Yeo wants to go smash everyone, and he's going to be out for 6-8 weeks. So if Jinby's doing it, it frees Yeo up to be that perfect the other everyman, you know?
Other side of the coin is he's young. You don't want him smashing his body up too early, and that was a concern throughout the year last year. Okay, go on then, screw him.
Yeah, fuck him.
Let's move on to some heroes and villains. And your hair chat there, Mop, has just reminded me. Quick hero and a quick shout out. A little bit of disconcerting behavior in the chat here from Oka, saying that he doesn't like the fantastic navy 90s jumper, the first jumper that I ever owned, and gone and got the reissue. Bit of hair chat, though. I'll tell you who looked absolutely shit hot in the 90s jumper was Tom Barrass. Say what you want about swinging forward, playing back. Is he going too simple? Do they get in each other's way? Tom Barrass, with the jumper tucked in and the socks pulled up and whatever the hell he's got on top of his head right now, he looks the part in the 90s jumper. Pretty crap season, that's our hero, but I tell you what, you reminded me there with the Jinby and talking about his mop. Well, Tom Barrass looked the absolute deal last week.
His press conference this week, if you haven't seen it, grab a hold of it and watch Tommy Barrass. Just, he's a bit of a unit. He's got a different brain to most in rattling around in there, but his press conference was pretty entertaining.
Oh, good stuff. I'll get onto that. I missed that one. I saw the quotes out of it, but.
So that was, there's been a couple of quotes come out of it, but he's.
He
approaches life from a different way to most people. So he's always interesting to talk to listen to, rather. Yeah.
I'm sure he's interesting to talk to as well, Keys. Do you have a hero for us that we've yet to cover off, or someone you want to give a shout out to again?
Heroes. I don't usually deal in heroes.
Well, I'll let you clear the runway for the villains.
I'll give someone a shout out. I'm a bit of a fan of Mark Duffield on SEN in his morning show, and also his writing on Code. Don't agree every time with what he says, but at least what he does comes from a position of knowledge, and he's fair. If someone deserves a clip, he'll give them a clip. If they deserve praise, he'll give them praise. And his criticism is usually is balanced, and it's not clickbaity and everything like that. So in terms of someone I like listening to or reading, he's pretty good. So I'll give him a tick. He's better than
very nice
99% of the others fuckwits.
Oh, we'll get to that, Keys. Don't you worry about that. Mop, who have you liked in the first month? What are we calling it? How does time work? Who do you like, Mark?
Real left field here, Caroline Wilson.
Yep. I think it's fair.
See, for someone who probably doesn't have, has always been a bit of a critic of us, probably isn't our biggest fan. I don't know if she's just mellowed or she's just enjoying someone else making an ass of themselves. But I don't know if you got footy classified last week. I think I tagged the page in it. She made old mate Sam McClure look like an absolute knob.
Yeah.
Locking himself in that.
Yeah.
No, but
held up a mirror. Fucking hell.
But he was clearly pouting like a child, and she just like, oh, clearly you got your sauce wrong, mate. It's all right. It happened. And he just kind of threw an absolute tantrum. It was just good to see. It was good to see that little dweeb get fucking knocked down a peg.
I think Caroline Wilson, and we'll get into some commentary villains as well a little bit later on, but I think, and it doesn't take a genius to see the thread with where I'm going with that, but I think Caroline Wilson gets unfairly knocked quite a bit. She runs pretty hard with what she runs. You know, if she's saying something, she will stand behind it and she'll back it. I think her mail's usually pretty good, you know, and I think she's, you know, sometimes people find her a bit jarring, and I understand all of that, but I think she's usually pretty good. She's got a bee in her bonnet about North Melbourne, so maybe you ignore a North Melbourne chat. And as you say, I don't think she's the biggest fan of us, but I don't think she's ever particularly unfair. I think it's just, it's all right, you don't have to love everybody, that's okay. But I think, yeah, in the scheme of things, well deserved, well pointed out, Mop. Now, look,
I think she held a long grudge after the drug era, the 2016. She held a long, long grudge.
Yeah, well, everybody else in footy is super clean, and there's no need to talk about drugs. So let's just move on. You know, no one takes them, no one's using them, no one's certainly hiding them, no one's certainly testing for them, and, you know, throwing the tests out the window. There's a very clear drugs policy, and we will stand behind it. And the Eagles are the ones that transgress it. You know, let's move on. Let's talk about some villains. And while we're keeping it in the media, Keys, I don't know if you've caught the West anytime in the last 6 months, but what the fuck? Because they've obviously, look, the West's going downhill at a rate of knots. Had a little look, you all like this. I've pulled stats about disposal efficiency and accuracy. Here's my stat of the podcast. Seven West, share price, 2024, down 30%. They're dog shit. No one wants them. No one reads them. No one buys it. But they've decided that their entire model is going to shift. It's this UK tabloid don't buy the Sun bullshit. They go, no one wants to read us. No one wants to pay to read us. No one wants to talk to us. Everyone's got Simo's calling out our journalists. Why don't we piss off people online and then get in little petty back and forth arguments with people online and then go to our advertisers and say, look, yeah, only six old people read the paper these days, but look, we've got thousands of comments online. If you advertise with us, if you give us money, you can reach all of these people. And they'll have someone gladly in their mention say, you're a fuckwit, mate. And then you know what? Plus one. That's plus one of their engagement count. They're dealing in engagement. They're not dealing in news. They're not dealing in facts. They're dealing in bullshit, Keys. Everybody needs to just stay off Twitter. Don't talk to them. Don't tweet at them. If they say something stupid, fucking take a screenshot and laugh at it behind their back to your mates. But don't get in their mentions, because that's literally the only way they're staying afloat. No one gives a shit about you, mate. With all respect in the world to the fucking Harvey Waruna reporter, or wherever this Jacob Wardle guy's come from. Sorry, mate. Some bloke in Harvey cannot run the sports section of the West overnight. Something's going on here. It's clearly because he's, you know, he's taking the shots from old mate Anthony, who's taken over the paper, and he's turned it into shit, Keys. Over to you. Fire away for your villains. I've had mine.
Yeah, shit paper. Don't buy it. Don't read it. Try not to click on it.
Don't get in their mentions.
Do occasionally tell them they're fuckwits online, but try to avoid that as well. Just a trash paper. I particularly like their habit of journalists listening to the radio or watching an interview on TV and writing a story as if they've done the interview or things like that. It's just basically transcribing, you know,
AFL.com.
Someone said on one of the other radio stations or something like that. And it's usually within an hour or two of it going to air. And more often than not, it's paywalled, which is a particularly intelligent thing to transcribe an interview that was free and then put it behind a paywall. You're copying someone else's work and then asking other people to pay to read it, which is... So, yeah, they can get stuffed. I'd say Kane Corns, but I've made a conscious decision to stay away from everything that fucking worm says. So I haven't really seen too much of what he is, because I actively avoid him, because that's...
I think he's dialed it back on us this year.
Far, I don't give a fuck. He can get in the bin and see if some other fireman can put him out. So don't like him. There was a really... I won't say good article. There was an article last week in amongst this chat about priority picks. There was an article from a journalist in Sydney whose name is Lachlan McSpudley or something like that. Now, I don't really care. Do we deserve a priority pick? Maybe we do, maybe we don't. I don't know. Let's wait and see how the season plays out before you get too far down that wormhole. But the side he used to justify why we didn't need a priority pick or didn't deserve a priority pick was Sydney,
yeah,
who have got the fucking biggest leg up in the league with their fucking academy. And he's saying, look at all these guys Sydney drafted. Why can't West
They got Isaac Heaney for pick 18. What? Just get Isaac Heaney for pick 18.
Academy, you dumb... You just look at it and you go, the lack of self-awareness with an article like that is off the charts. And it's, I mean, like I said, there's twos and fros and everything like that. But if you're going to use a club as an example as to why Sydney is the worst one, if you want to use a club, use someone like Geelong, who haven't been down the bottom of the ladder and haven't had a lot of top-end draft picks or things like that, but have managed to stay competitive for...
They've had deals that other clubs potentially wouldn't get with go homes and salary dumps and whatever. But what they haven't had is Isaac Heaney's the best player in footy this year, and they got him for free. Yeah. They paid pick 18 for him. They didn't pay pick 18 for him. They paid a bunch of bullshits in the 40s and 50s.
They got a son of a 300 game player as an academy selection because fucking Blakey was going to play rugby league if he didn't have the Sydney Academy. They've got Mills and Campbell and Goulden. And the thing that people don't understand with that Sydney Academy is those guys come through a system for a year or two and they're brought up to be Sydney players because they know they're going to get them. So when they get to the club, they're almost ready-made players. And Sydney can develop a draft strategy on the basis that they... Imagine knowing you go into a draft and you're going to get Braden Campbell with pick 5 or with whatever. You can go, okay, well, we've got Braden Campbell, so we can make sure we've got pick 3 so we can take Logan McDonald after North Melbourne dropped the ball and pick Will Phillips instead. But they've got a whole draft strategy based around, well, we know we're going to get these guys and we're going to get them with later picks. So we can move other picks backwards or forwards to manipulate what else we want to do in the draft. I mean,
yeah, we should just do that. Let's do that.
So he in particular can... I'd never heard of him. I hope I never see anything from him again. But, he can get stuffed. And now I'll leave Mop can take McClure to the cleaners.
Mop up, so to speak. Over to you.
All right, I'll start with the obvious. Old mate McClure just doubly... spent 12 months and he's still doubling down. He just won't accept that he fucked up, that he either overcommitted, he got a bad source. You guys know my theory. My theory is he was fed it by the family, so the family had a different kind of perspective to what Harley himself actually wanted, and he kind of oversold it. That's been my theory for 12 months. I'm sticking by it, whatever. But the fact, clearly he got it wrong. Clearly the kid's pissed off and the kid's quite happy doing what he's doing. And he still, to this day, remains adamant. No, I got it right. Fuck everything else. Fuck all the proof. Oh, mate, just go away. Scoop.
Consider how old our oldest players will be 3 years from now. You know, have you considered that? I don't know if you would have seen this on Footy Classified. They put up a huge graphic.
Oh, yeah.
Here's how old the oldest players on the Eagles will be when Harley Reid's contract's up. Oh, really? Will people be 3 years older 3 years from now? Fuck. That's you're quite brilliant, Sam. That's like fucking hell. That's insightful stuff. And the other thing is, and this is the thing that always gets... Oh, sorry, Mop, to cut you off, but I'll get back to you in 2 seconds. This is the thing that gets overlooked. You draft Harley Reid and he requests a trade home after a year, a la Horn Francis. You get picks back for it. Or if you draft Harley Reid and he only stays 3 years and he doesn't sign an extension, and you know what? It's just not working out, but he's shown some good footy. He goes home. You get picks back for him.
Is it?
People go, oh, what about Judd? What about Judd? He won a Brownlow. He captained a flag, and then we got 200 games of Chris Marston, and oh, by the way, as a bit of a throw-in, Josh fucking Kennedy. Like, doesn't always work out.
Tony Knott.
Don't worry about Tony Knott. It's not important. But the point, you know, like, you don't... He doesn't walk, you know? If he gets injured, I get. But, you know, Mop, it doesn't make sense to
anyone me. Could get injured, nonsense. Though. Anyone could get injured.
Yeah, no, it doesn't make sense.
It's a straw man argument. You're not going to win. You just look like an ass. But I would argue, Keys, Badge, there is a... In the first month of football, there is a bigger villain at play here.
Okay.
And that is Travis Dillon. That's his name. Mr. NFL, with this fucked up drugs policy. This is an absolute joke for a so-called professional organization. That it came out and they've had to kind of accept that it's true, and they've not denied it, that players are being pulled with mysterious injuries because they failed a drug test. Instead of disclosing it, they, under the rules, it is perfectly permissible for a player to be warned by the doctor, yeah, actually, you're no good here, mate. You might want to fake a hammy strain. What the fuck organization is this? How is that? How is any of this accountable to the fans and to the members and to the clubs themselves who only have half an idea?
Oh, Muff, that's cute. The fans and the members. What is he saying? No, it's keep us out of the paper. You eat shit on the paper for, because what was that? That was 2 weeks ago. That's blown over. It hasn't blown over forever. You know, there's stuff that'll come out from it. But like, that was a big story 2 weeks ago and we've moved on. We're back to, is the bump dead now? Like, you eat shit on it once rather than having your players in the paper every week, every month, every game because one of them's got hurt or, you know, certain players like certain things and certain clubs doing this and that, doing the tests. Eat a slightly larger sandwich of shit once instead of eating a very small entree of shit every week. That's their approach, and fucking fair play to them, it's work. Because like, when, honestly, when was that? Was that last week? Was that 2 weeks ago? Was that round two or three or four? I think it was round three, maybe.
It's before Gather Round, wasn't it? Because Gather Round kind maybe. Of took the steam out of it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
No, it was the week before that because it was the week leading up to Melbourne playing Port Adelaide. So it was because that was the thing. Melbourne came out and, you know, they beat Port Adelaide in a good game and everything like that, and it sort of put. I think that the thing with all of that is I understand the drugs policy, and I think the thing that gets forgotten is that the testing for those drugs is voluntary by the players. They don't actually have to do the testing. But if they didn't do the testing and they rolled up on game day with coke, then they're getting 2 years. So there's parts of the policy I understand, and I understand the confidentiality of it and things like that. And I've a couple of people in the media that made the good points, and they've said, and I think Ryan Daniels was the one that said it, is if you've got someone who's in a dark place and things like that and gets drugs and what have you, use it and gets caught, then the policy's fine. For those type of guys, it works, and that's the reason for it. But then he's also said there's clearly a cohort of players that they're just taking the piss, so to speak, and it's not Gatorade, that they just turn around and go, I know that I can go, I can party up on the weekend, I can take what I want, and if I get tested, I can go and I can say, look, I took some coke. If I'm blowing positive, pull me out of the game and I won't get caught, and I'm, you know, everything's sweet. And those guys basically get away with it, and there's nothing that can be done about it. And what's worse, you're putting the doctors in a really ordinary position because they're the ones that have to make, they're the ones that know about it. They can't tell anybody about it. And the clubs have got, clearly they've got a player that's an issue, got an issue, and they don't know that he has because they're not told. So the coaches aren't told or anything like that. And I think that's the problem with the policy. The secondary problem with that policy is going back 2 decades, we rightfully got pilloried because turned a blind eye or didn't do what they could have or things like that.
Because we were honest, Keith, because we refused to play a dirty game.
In the wake of Trevor Nisbet's retirement and things like that, that's come out, and he said, yeah, at the time, the AFL did sweet fuck all to help us. They went to the AFL and said, we've got a problem, can you help us? And the AFL did nothing to help. And things like that. And now, 2 years later, after all that, you had Hawthorn got the injunction when they had their problems sort of started to come out, and it just put. And people still don't talk about how many players Hawthorn had with doing drugs in 2008 when Hawthorn got the injunction and Hawthorn won a flag. And the reporting around the Melbourne saga compared to what we were got when it came out in the open is chalk and cheese. And I think that's the. It's grates. I mean, as a club, we do wrong. But if anytime a drug thing comes up, the 2005 to 2000s, Eagles get brought up. Everyone ignores Hawthorn. Everyone ignores that Collingwood have had a huge amount of issues with guys. They've had two guys test positive to coke on match day and get suspended for that. You know, that just gets forgotten about. Melbourne have had, you know, all sorts of, and you can guarantee that Clayton Oliver's been removed from a game because he tested positive the day before a match. And they said, oh, yeah, probably shouldn't play, Clayton, so we'll just sit you out in this one. That's the bit that annoys me. Getting back to Forehead McClure, and it's not just him, but it's broader. It's all the ones that, and there's still commentary around, you know, West Coast could have or should have traded pick one, you know, ignoring how good Harley Reid is, and that actually, and they turn around and they refer to this so-called bounty of draft picks that we knocked back. The best offer that was reported that I know of was 2-15 and 17. And that probably involved, I think it was pick 21, it became pick 30. That was going back to North. Now, if you're going to say we should have done this. Go back and be honest and say, this is what was offered, not what some fantasy fuck dreams up that we could have got. What was actually offered and the players that we might have been able to pick with those selections. And then say... And then if you want to make your case, do that. So these are the picks they could have got. These are the players they could have got. And this is why that trio of players or whatever would be better than Harley Reid. And you know why they don't do it? Because there's no trio of players that would have been more valuable to us than Harley Reid for the reasons we spoke about earlier. And they don't
We're talking about it. People are in their mentions. It's the model. It's engagement farming. That's the whole model. And he'll stand up there and go, they could have had two top 10 picks for Tom Barras, that was mentioned in the media by somebody with their real name and their real face. They didn't have a fucking mask on. They didn't go by an alias. Somebody put their name and face to that to the world and said, the Eagles could have got two top 10 picks for Barras. They could have got a first rounder for Elliott Yeo. They could have traded Jack Darling for a pick in the top 20. Those were things that were thrown out there on national television this week with a genuine seriousness, well, at least on the face. I think behind it, he knows what he's doing. But
It's bad when Elliott Yeo's played three
games. Yeah, Elliott Yeo's played like what grand total of what, 15, 20 games in the last 3 years. Jack Darling is where he is, and God bless him. I go into bat for him a lot, but his body's shot. No one was giving us a first round pick. If somebody said today, you can have a top 30 pick for Jack Darling at the end of the year, where do I sign? I'd sign in my own blood. But no one's offering that. It's not the reality. And I love Jack Darling. I'm higher on Jack Darling than I think most people on the board. It's not an offer. That doesn't exist. Who was giving two top 10 picks for fucking Tom Barras? The Swan stuff got shut down right away, and everything that's come out around that sounds like there was probably a bit of a disconnect between both sides. We were getting two top 10 picks. What? It's farcical. Anyway, you set me off again, boys.
Can I just correct you on something? Didn't North come out and dispute that pick two was ever in play? Wasn't it pick three the whole time?
There was a bit. It was either two or three, and it was even.
I think it was three, which makes the trade even shitter.
Yeah. We get our pick of the litter, and you can have what's left. Oh, where do we sign? Fucking hell, how good. All right, any last villains before we, I think we've gone for about an hour and a half, which is all good, actually. You know, it's only a monthly wrap-up. I think we used to go for an hour a week, so hour and a half's pretty good. And once again, thank you to everybody in the comments, and still trucking along very nicely in the views. So thank you to everybody that's watching along. That's very pleasing to say. But quick whip around, any more villains that we have yet to get to, gentlemen?
Oh, I think we've covered them with a blanket.
Yeah, I'm happy with that.
They're all shitheads.
Aren't they all? And how? I reckon we leave it there then, gentlemen. I think that's a good one in the books. And here we go. I've got Harley Reid, the best player in footy, is one of our options that
of all time. You
know, of all time. So that's good. We can end on that. That's a nice note. Get down to the footy on Sunday. Get to see Harley Reid. How fucked is our fixture, by the way? I didn't touch on that, but I reckon there's four or five teams that would also be winless in this spot. So we're not good. In fact, we're very, very bad. But I think we might not be quite as bad as teams and as people think. Anyway, we'll see. Mop, thank you very much, mate. Thank you for coming on the show and sharing your thoughts.
Thanks, Badge. It's been good to be back with you boys. Thanks, Keezy.
Yeah. Keezy, yes, fantastic to see you. It's been very good to be back, so appreciate it, Keezy. Thank you.
See you in a month.
Yeah, that's good fun. All good fun.
Good fun. And yeah, look, thanks to everybody watching along, commenting along, playing along at home. We will upload an audio version of this as well. So if you'd like to hear it again on your drive or while you're mowing the lawn, June, say g'day. Have a little listen to us as well. And yeah, Mop said it. Look, hopefully see you in a month. We'll see what happens. Might break the glass and do an emergency pod if we snag a win at some point. Maybe even this weekend. Who's to say? But if you don't hear from us, we'll put some stuff out. So look for Twitter, look for Facebook, and look for Big Footy. And apart from that, boys, go the Eagles.
Go Eagles.
Go the fucking Eagles.